from BBS Radio, where truth and news still exist in the original form. You're tuned in to The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics, government, and selfishness went wrong, and how you can take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of insight aimed at making each of us more responsible, more cooperative, and more aware of the spiritual bonds that connect us to each other, no matter what insanely silly and stupid things we find to squabble over. You can call us toll-free from the U.S. to 877-876-5227, from Canada to 888-810-8322, or you can call direct to 530-876-3222. This show is carried online, and you may also be able to get it on the air in your local area. To find out if an old-fashioned on-the-air station in your area carries this show, just contact us at bbsradio.com. The website for this show can be found on the BBS Radio site and at thespiritualpolitician.blogspot.com. All past shows become available as soon as it's humanly or even extra-humanly possible on the station archives. My own blog is located at howtheneoconstolefreedom.blogspot.com. My blog this week got two new entries. One was Blackstone Addendum. That article is a response to the many queries I received for advice on investing. If you feel that creeping sense of panic, check it out. The next article on financial issues will be on mortgages and the scams presently being sprung on the American people. But the one at the top right now, also appearing many other places, is Ronald Reagan, An Ugly Truth. That article neatly knits together the issues of the neocons, their use of icons, what the past tells us if we take time to look, and what we can do to change direction. All of us make mistakes because we lack complete knowledge. Few of us see enough of the action to really know what's going on. The neocons depend on that. So, as to what has been happening this week in politics. The article I wrote this past week on Ronnie Reagan explains how Ronnie injected himself as a conservative into Republican politics, having come from the left. Ronnie Reagan, a wonderful, warm man, was never a conservative. In the article, I lay out how he managed to create that illusion, taking advantage of the credulity of a group in California, United Republicans of California, who organized in 1963 to get Barry Goldwater, a real conservative, the Republican nomination. Yurok was Ronnie's doorway to the governorship of California and then into the presidency as a conservative, something he never was. Installed in that position and armed with the perception that he was a conservative, Ronnie proceeded to effectively redefine the term with the aid and assistance of the neocons who so eagerly assisted him. I liked Ronnie, although I never supported him in politics. I liked him because he was introduced to me by my father, who knew him. As a person, he was wonderful. What he supplied for the neocons was a face that provided cover for their agenda. Recently, satirist Rich Little, who portrayed Reagan many times, told the story of when Ronnie let him impersonate him while he, Ronnie, went out for a sandwich. Quote, "Just don't start any wars," Ronnie advised Rich as he strolled off for that snack. Ronnie delegated cheerfully and continuously. The role of icon was just that for Ronnie, a role. He left the policy to those who specialized in that sort of thing. We should remember, however, that he did take responsibility when he realized something inappropriate had gone on during his watch. Ronnie did not obfuscate on Iran-Contra like later presidents did. When he noticed, Ronnie did the right thing. Let's keep that in mind. Naturally, I have been attacked by those who want to keep using Ronnie as an icon to justify their agenda for emptying our pockets, canceling the Bill of Rights, and enslaving all of us. One of the hysterical, probably paid operatives who is posting on the article, as it appears on Op-Ed News, is Ernie. I'm going to read my present response to Ernie here, Googling his email address was interesting. Ernie ended his long whine by expressing his sympathy to the Reagan family, presumably because I pointed out how long the truth has been overlooked. Here's what I said. Those needed sympathy are ordinary Americans. It is painful when we realize our trust and respect has been misused. But until we do just that, reassess, we will be open to the same continuing manipulation by the neocons and their corporate employers. Here's the resolution passed May 4th, 1975, by United Republicans of California. They had figured it out. The 4 pages of documentation will be available on their site soon. United Republicans of California, be it resolved, subject, oppose candidacy of Reagan, whereas Ronald Reagan has made eloquent conservative speeches while his deeds have served the liberals, whereas despite Reagan's claim of conservatism since 1950, the left dominated his politics prior to 1960. Whereas, during his 1966 gubernatorial race, Reagan selected liberal Rockefeller men to run his campaign, and upon election, appointments continued in the same pattern, excluding conservatives. Whereas, Reagan supported Nixon's leftist policies, praised Kissinger, but betrayed conservative candidates. Whereas, Reagan promised economy but doubled the state budget and raised taxes. Whereas, Reagan actively promoted regional government contrary to his expressed philosophy of local government. Whereas, under Reagan, liberal education programs accelerated and PPBS, a budgetary process of political change, established moving public schools toward total state control. Whereas Reagan also betrayed conservative principles in the areas of property rights, income tax, withholding, gun control, medicine, mental health, welfare reform, crime control, etc. Therefore, be it resolved that UROC oppose Ronald Reagan as candidate for president or vice president, and urge Americans nationwide to carefully scrutinize his record. In other words, UROC's membership did not appreciate being lied to. Most of us would feel exactly the same way, I bet. We reassess people when we learn more about them. I heard a lot of criticisms of Ronnie. I refused to listen for a long time. Some of those were so strange and obvious that I later realized I was dismissing them with other charges that I could check out. That is when I started talking to UROC. This is going to be hard for all of us who loved Ronnie, but facts are facts. And there will be a process of shock, disbelief, suspension, and then acceptance. Then we can move forward and heal the breaches. Americans need to come together. To do that, all of us need to examine our assumptions. We've been lied to. Every single one of us. Left and right, all of us have been subject to the same kind of manipulative strategies. That is the past. We need to move forward to a future that affirms original vision for all of us. We need to do that now. When you stand at the seat of judgment, nothing but the truth matters. Ronnie is still being used as an icon by the neocons to destroy America. America is different. It is the place on earth where the people's inherent rights, direct from God, put their relationship with God and those rights before all human institutions, especially government. I know Ronnie would agree if he were here today. He was not afraid to take the heat when the truth surfaced. He faced his end with courage, and he would have confronted this in exactly the same way. Now our thought for the week ahead. All of this brings us into the issue of the grids that the neocons and their corporate employers are so eager to make sure that we stay stable to. The grids are all about money, the corporate bottom line that ensures that they will continue to profit, while the expenses of maintaining their system are also borne by us. They use the power of government in ways you could not even imagine to do just that. Recently, we've talked about the Real ID, we've talked about a lot of different things, but tonight, what we're going to do is we are going to get into the issue of what it feels like to find out that you have been lied to and how you do or recover from that. We have a substitute guest tonight, and that guest is Connie Ruffley, and she is the head of UROC, United Republicans of California. And what we're going to be talking about is the organization that went through this process of being betrayed by Ronald Reagan, what they look at, the way they look at the world today, what we think is possible for the future, and what the process of recovery can be when you finally ground and realize what the truth is. Please welcome Connie Ruffley. Connie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Well,
and this
my
is kind
pleasure.
Of exciting, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Getting to talk about, you know, something that really has, you know, nobody has really wanted to talk about if people knew that it had happened.
That's right. Reagan was, as you said, you know, he was a very warm and wonderful person, and everyone who knew him personally was really impressed by him. He could charm the squirrels out of the trees, and he was a great communicator. He had a very glib wit and, you know, pithy one-liners, and everybody just loved being around him. He was a very genuine person.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very sad when UROC found out that, you know, he was not the conservative that he portrayed himself to be. One of the ladies who is currently the state co-chair of UROC, I am the other state co-chair, Marion Hurley, had a catered sit-down dinner for 400 people in her backyard. And Ronnie and Nancy came, and he spoke, and he was very eloquent in his speech and everything, and everybody became very busy afterwards and supported him and got out the vote. And he was subsequently elected as governor of California.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just a matter of even just endorsing him. It was a matter of people putting their time and their hearts and their money probably on the line for him.
Exactly. And that was what, you know, part of the betrayal was. It was awful. And UROC gave him a list, after he was elected, UROC gave him a list of people that they thought would be excellent in different departments throughout California. That list included top-notch conservatives, just the type of men whom Reagan had portrayed himself to be. And when those people were not appointed to those positions, people were saying, well, you know, Ronnie, he's brand new in this job. He's only been in there for a month or two. Let's give him a little time. And they still weren't being appointed. So someone had the bright idea to, you know, no one knew in the conservative circles who these people were. So someone had the bright idea of saying, let's see who was dedicated to vote for Nelson Rockefeller at the 1964 National Republican Convention.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, that is where those people came from.
That must have been a real shock.
It was. And so then afterwards, others said, well, we're going to wait for a year, do some research, and we're going to track all of his appointments and the other things that he has done and put them together. And this is when they came up with this resolution saying that he was unfit to be a candidate for either president or vice president.
Mm-hmm. But that took a long time. I mean, we're talking about 66 was the gubernatorial election, and then it's 75 that this resolution is affirmed.
Yes. So it did take some time. It wasn't just an overnight type thing. And, they were tracking him from some time back, from back in 68 through the early 70s, and they had gathered all of this information together. As you said, you know, he supported Nixon's leftist policies with the wage and price controls, and he praised Henry Kissinger and stabbed conservative candidates in the back.
Mm-hmm. So it was also a matter of not supporting conservative candidates.
Right. He was actually helping to defeat conservative candidates, and I think that you had talked about Joe Shell. Former California State Senator Joe Shell, who was one of the founding organizers of UROC, and had worked against his candidacy for as governor. Mm-hmm. And that was a shock too.
Well, all of these things together must have just simply given people a sense of, you know, this total betrayal. So it's
absolutely
amazing that things weren't more wasn't said earlier, because I was fairly aware of politics at the time, and I didn't hear about the resolution at the time.
Well, not many people did, because it was only, they didn't publish it any place. It was just something that was done within UROC. And some of the other people may have gotten, you know, some of the members may have gotten it out, but Ronnie's popularity was so fantastic that many of the people in UROC didn't want to believe it.
And mm-hmm. So you had that.
Even with the documentation in front of them, they didn't want to believe it. Today you see people who invoke the name of Ronald Reagan, and they get misty-eyed and flutter their eyelashes, and, you know, how dare you attack Ronald Reagan, because he has become an icon. Unfortunately, it's an icon of the left. And in one of the last debates, all of the candidates invoked the name of Ronald Reagan, naming themselves, you know, Reagan Republicans. And
well, that certainly has meaning now.
Pardon?
Given what we know about him, that has meaning now. It's
yes,
just
it
like
does.
Being a Goldwater Republican, but they're different polls.
Yes. And I'm not sure which one that was, but there was a short clip that showed McCain and Romney and Giuliani and all the others invoking the name of Ronald Reagan. So
mm-hmm.
he's still out there, and he's still useful to the people who've been put up by the, you know, the large corporate interest, as you say.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly, and it's not even so necessarily so much a liberal, is that it's neocon.
Yes.
Which is one of the horrifying things about all of this. It's, you look at it, and we've all been manipulated, right and left.
Right.
We think a certain thing is true, and it's not.
No,
and it makes you wonder what you can trust.
Right. That's why it's incumbent upon everyone to do the research himself, to, and I use that in gender-neutral form, is incumbent upon himself to do his own research to find out what the facts really are. And now
mm-hmm.
with the Internet, it's so much easier to do it than it was before. Back in the days when UROC was extolling the virtues of Goldwater, it was shoe leather activism that got out there and got the troops together. Then in those days, you didn't even have a fax machine. You didn't have email. All you had was shoe leather and a mimeograph machine.
Mm-hmm.
Today we have copiers, faxes, email, Blackberries. Even blogger teams, I'm not even sure what a blogger team is, but everything that you could possibly use. And thank God for the Internet, because we can still get the truth out there, and it cannot be muzzled by the corporations that own the media.
Mm-hmm. And all of those things have made a huge difference. And, of course, one of the things they want to do is they want to shut down the Internet so that we can't have that access to the truth and to each
sure.
other.
Absolutely, and the same thing with talk radio as well, too. They want to be able to shut down talk radio because it's conservative, and they say, well, they want to have the other point of view on there as well, too. Well, let's look at the facts that people only are really interested in conservative talk radio. They're not interested in liberal talk radio because it failed. And,
well, it failed because it didn't find a market.
That's exactly right.
They don't support that themselves, so there's really little you can complain about. It's like saying you want any good, but you don't support it by buying it.
That's exactly right.
So, I mean, how can one complain?
No,
except, of course, the people do.
Yes.
But go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm sorry. You go ahead.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I really kind of wanted to get into that I think is really interesting is
mm-hmm.
the formation of UROC and what the UROC meant to the whole Goldwater movement. Because, as you said, the shoe leather activism is very much analogous to exactly what we're seeing on the Internet today.
Exactly.
But that it was people taking their own resources, right, and going out and hitting the street.
Right. It was former State Senator Joe Shell and Assemblyman Bruce Reagan who were the founders and the organizers of United Republicans of California. They were sick and tired of the way that the California Republican Party was going under the Rockefellers. And so they decided to do something about it. And UROC is a bona fide party of the Republican Party, but it was formed as a grassroots organization and as an educational foundation. So therefore, we consider ourselves to be grassroots activists and not being ordered from the top down as and being told what to do.
So that's really very much on the same model as original American, you know, ideas about how we ran our towns and our communities.
Exactly. And we believe that our inalienable rights come from God. We believe in lower taxes, less intrusion from the government into our lives, a free economy, and that we should be able to do what, you know, in the pursuit of happiness. And so far, the government today has been doing everything to enact a tyranny over Americans. And as you were talking about the Real ID Act, we have written a resolution condemning the Real ID Act. But anyway, there were today.
And that's something that. Go ahead. Sorry.
And today, the only champion that we have is, of course, Ron Paul, who is fighting these things.
Yes, and Ron Paul, of course, is somebody that UROC endorsed.
Exactly. We endorsed him at our May 17th spring convention, spring state convention. And because we have written it each, well, we have state conventions twice a year, in the spring and in the fall. And we endorse candidates who mirror our images and our principles. One of the things that we have done over the years with our resolutions, and we usually have about 10 resolutions, but anywhere from one to four of Ron Paul's pieces of legislation we have endorsed because they do mirror our principles. And so he has always been in the forefront of UROC as far as its politics, because with Ron Paul, what you see is what you get. He is not put up there by anyone to, you know, as a false front, or there's no one hiding behind him. He is the man who... what he says is what he means. That's why in Congress, you know, he is known as Dr. No.
Amen.
Yes.
He doesn't have to consult because he knows it's so obvious. I'm not going to do that because it's wrong. It violates the Constitution.
Exactly. In fact, as he proffered legislation at one point that said that all legislation had to have a constitutional citation before it could even be brought up as a bill. And that would have gotten rid of all of these ridiculous things of, you know, pork barrels and everything else. And as a congressman, he's the only person who has not involved himself with the very lucrative pension plan. At the end of the year, if he has any money left over, then he returns it to the Treasury Department. All of these things. I mean, he is a man of principle. He took an oath upon a Bible to follow the Constitution, and that is exactly what he has done. Kent Snyder, who is his chief of staff, got his, I shouldn't say got, received his master's degree on the thesis of Dr. Paul. And Kent went through about 4,000 pieces of legislation to find how many congressmen had voted no on one single piece of legislation where they cast a single dissenting vote. And he found that there were 68 congressmen who had cast a no vote one time, but they only did it once. They never did it again. Ron Paul has cast 73 single dissenting votes against legislation because it was all unconstitutional. While other congressmen are out there, you know, trying to rename post offices and whatever, Ron Paul is enacting real legislation. Social Security income benefits for Americans only, and depriving, which was because the government wants to give $345 billion of our Social Security money to Mexico to pay for Mexicans who have worked illegally in this country and yet have decided that they need to have Social Security money. And that's only after they've worked maybe 18 months.
That's horrifying.
Ridiculous. it is horrifying. And then he's also written legislation to take away the taxing of the Social Security. Why should Social Security be taxed as income when it's already been a tax in the first place? It's a double taxation, and our poor, our poor senior citizens need to have their money. They worked hard for that money, and it should be theirs. He's also worked very hard to get rid of other taxes that were terrible for families, like the family farm tax and inheritance taxes and other things. He's just been a champion of all of those things. And there isn't anyone else out there who can compete with him. When Osama bin Laden was charged with all of these things during, you know, right after the attack on 9/11, he was the one who put up legislation that would put a head a price on the head of Osama bin Laden. And he did that under the constitutional provision of ridding the, you know, terrorism from the high seas, if you want to call it that.
And so that was something that was allowed by the Constitution, and so he did it. So he's been very consistent that way.
Absolutely. And he was taking the war on terror, he was taking a rifle effect, taking a rifle approach, I should say, rather than a shotgun effect. Right now you have all these soldiers and everyone over in Iraq, and they don't need to be there. Doggone it, we need to have them back over here in our America and guarding our borders.
Well, exactly. Of course, they should be. And, of course, he also, in terms of immigration, believes very strongly that Americans should not have to be paying all of the different things into the hands of illegal aliens who are working here. So he doesn't want them to have any kind of entitlements.
Absolutely.
And he doesn't want their children to be in school here.
No. And to have them give illegal alien children be given deference to in regards to in-state tuition is terrible. One of the pieces of legislation now is the DREAM Act, which would give illegal immigrants the status, you know, they could have in-state tuition, which is not allowed to Americans. And he's totally against all of these things.
And he's been very consistent in speaking out against each of these things over a long period of time. And for a long time, until very recently, that sort of made him a joke in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
They called him Dr. No, but he also got no respect.
Exactly. But now the people are getting respect for him. It's interesting that, speaking of disrespect, of this most recent incident was in early part of July, where he was denied... where he was, you know, forbidden to be at that Iowa meeting regarding the
presidential forum,
candidates
in
it, right. And there were about 600 people who showed up for the 9 people who were running and wanted to see what was going on. But yet, because of YouTube and the meetup groups and everything else, they put on another event in the same venue as the first one, and almost right next door, and 1,000 people, a minimum of 1,000 people, and up to 1,200 people showed up for that event for Dr. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had twice as many people in Iowa as all the other 9 combined. So he's...
Absolutely.
It's an incredible thing. I spoke at the first Pasadena meetup group, and the electricity in the air, you had older people as well as younger people, and as Kent Snyder said, the meeting of the old guard and the new. And the electricity for Dr. Paul was almost palpable. You could feel it. And it was wonderful. It is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God for things such as the YouTube, where even though the mainstream media has blocked off his appearances and his speeches and everything, you can go to places such as YouTube and see exactly what he has said. And I think that's wonderful. That's one of the things that we've never seen before.
Absolutely. It's totally changing the face of politics. And
it is.
I suspect, I'm going to make a prediction, one of the things that is going to happen is that people are going to stop even paying attention to politics in the mainstream.
Right.
Because they're going to come to understand that that isn't for them, that that's not real politics, that that is really simply this artificial horse race that the media like to put on.
Sure. This is one of the reasons why the mainstream newspapers, such as the Los Angeles Times and the San Francisco Chronicle, are not really taking the pulse of the American people, and the people are tired of it. That's why they're going to the Internet and searching out for themselves what is going on and what the truth actually is. And the truth is coming through. So the Bible says, you know, the truth shall set you free, and that's what it's doing.
Amen. You can see that it's doing that over and over and over again.
Yes.
And when you watch the Ron Paul campaign, one of the things that is also funny is the sense you'll get from Ron that he sort of feels like it isn't that his campaign, he's been hijacked by the campaign that insisted that he be the candidate.
Yes.
I think I've heard him say almost exactly that. Well, it really wasn't my idea. I was going to go home and retire.
Yeah.
But they made me an offer I couldn't refuse.
Well, actually, it was his wife who suggested that he become a candidate, and he, you know, very much believes in her. I'm not sure how long they're married, but they have been married. But he has 5 children and 18 grandchildren. And when you think of grandchildren, you think of small children, babies, and whatever. But I saw a picture of him recently with 4 of his granddaughters, and these were grown women. They were beautiful.
Yes. Oh, they are. It's a wonderful family.
Yes. And they're all very much for their grandfather. And when his kids were going through college, he made absolutely certain that none of them took out any kind of loans because he feels that it's terrible to have any kind of debts at all. And so he and his wife helped them out, but they also had the kids work as well, too, so that they would not be under the onus of these student loans.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's done that. He's done so many, and none of his 5 children have ever had a divorce.
No, nope.
They're all happily married.
Yes. And he is just absolutely a wonderful man, and I'm sure that all the patients that he's had over the years, he's delivered 4,000 babies, and I'm sure that all the people who were his patients will be voting for him as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just a very, very wonderful man. And but what you see is what you get.
That's right. He's lived a wonderful life in a lot of ways, too, because, you know, he lives the reality that we want to believe is possible.
Yes.
And he's really made that, you know, he's made that work.
Yes.
In a way that a lot of Americans have just come to believe isn't even possible.
Yes. He's terrific.
He is, absolutely. And let's go back, because now we have sort of an image of in our mind about what this Ronald is like, Ronald Paul. Now let's take a look again at Ronald Reagan.
Yes, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get off the track there.
No. I took us off the track, so that was fine.
Good.
But let's look at Ronnie, as he had very problematical relationships with his kids.
Yes.
Several of them. There was a lot of tension there.
Yes.
With both families, because he had, you know, kids both by his previous wife and by Nancy.
Yes.
And, you know, any of us can have problems, but the fact is, Ron Paul didn't, and Ronald Reagan did. And
that
certainly says something about who they were.
Yes.
And who they are as human beings, because you have to take a look at those things when you're judging and assessing the totality of the person.
Correct.
And let's look for a moment now at his relationship with Your Rock again, because you have said that Yurok has had sort of a long-term relationship with Ron Paul.
Yes, we did have a long-term relationship. We have had a long-term relationship with Ron Paul. Now, the relationship that we had with Ronald Reagan was not quite as long, and we did not have the opportunity to find out about him as well as we could have. And one of the problems that happened was during the time when Barry Goldwater was running for president, Joe Schell paid to have a speech written for Barry Goldwater. And when Nancy found out about the speech, Nancy Reagan found out about the speech, she called Joe Schell and asked him if Ronnie could read the speech at the 1964 Republican convention. And Joe told her no, it was for Barry Goldwater to read. And she called back again and said, you know, pretty please, can Ronnie read the speech at the Republican convention? And he told her again, no. And either the third or the fourth time, she called up and she cried on the phone for him to be allowed to read the speech. And Joe was moved by her tears and allowed Ronald Reagan to read that speech at the Republican National Convention, which was Ronald's entree into Republican and conservative politics, because everyone said, oh, he's our
the
boy.
The speech.
The speech was what did it. He's our
yes.
boy. And everybody was taken in. They were charmed by him because he was. And, you know, he was spectacularly charming, and people were very much, they loved him. I remember seeing
mm-hmm.
at the funeral, you know, when he was flown from Air Force One, and they took him from, was it Andrews Air Force Base? And they took him up
so,
to
yeah.
the Reagan Library. People stopped on the freeway, on the other side of the freeway, and just waited for the motorcade with his coffin to come by, because that's how much they loved him. That's how much his icon had been, you know, fabricated and everything. And but people loved him because he was a genuine, genuine, lovely man. But back to 1964. So everyone was taken in by Ronnie when he then began to run as governor of California, which was only 2 years later. No one had a chance to really look at the background and who his associates were, because books were written about him, about his autobiography, you know, where's the rest of me? And there was another one that was written as well, too, and they were great. But
mm-hmm.
but
they were constructs.
Yes, they were. But everyone was just, you know, so enamored with his speech and everything that they didn't look at anything else. And same thing with UROC. One of the ladies, well, fact is the co-state chairman of UROC, Marion Hurley, had a catered sit-down dinner for 400 people in her backyard, and that's when Ronnie and Nancy came and spoke. And I think I mentioned this before, and the people were still enthralled because he could put the right tone on the speech and deliver it so eloquently and so genuinely that people really believed that he was a conservative.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you could definitely, because I think a lot of us had exactly the same reaction.
Yeah.
to his life and to what he symbolized for us.
Yes.
And you didn't think about what he was doing. He was Ronnie, and you
That's
loved
right.
him.
Yes. And when he had worked for, I think it was the series Death Valley Days, and showed up in his cowboy hat, you know, everybody was in love with cowboys. John Wayne was a cowboy, and Ronald Reagan was a cowboy, and there was just that genre that people really believed that the people who wore the hats and everything were the good guys. And,
That's right.
And that was the persona that he had as well, too. So that along with, I mean, there were a number of things that contributed to his popularity. But people just weren't looking at his politics. It was personality over politics is what it was.
Well, it was, he was saying the words. He was enunciating
yes.
the right words.
Exactly.
The disconnect was between the words that he said and then the reality that he delivered. And
right.
I can remember my father, you know, deciding that he wasn't going to support him.
Right.
You know, in the agony, because he couldn't.
Right.
Because he had made it impossible. But it took a long time for it to go there.
Yeah.
And there was real pain in that, I think, for a lot of us.
Well, we lost a lot of members of UROC because they just absolutely could not believe that Ronnie would have done that to them and have been so liberal instead of being conservative, because they were just, again, in love with the persona and not the, you know, what he had actually, they couldn't take off the blinders. They were just looking at him in rose-colored glasses, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. Did people feel a strong sense of emotional, a personal connection to him, and how did that play out after, you know, after it happened, after they realized?
Well, as I said, you know, we lost about half of the people in UROC because they just didn't want to believe it. It was an emotional hurt. There were friendships that had been lifelong friendships that were lost simply because they couldn't accept the truth. Mm-hmm. And it was a shame. I mean, there were a lot of people. There was a lot of hurt. There was a lot of emotional hurt. And you just don't recover from that, you know, for a long time. But the true, when you look at someone, you have to look at the person. You have to look at his background, who his associates were. And you can't just look at the person by himself. It's like when you get married, you just don't marry the person. You marry that person's mother and father and the brothers and the sisters and everybody else in the family as well, too. And when mm-hmm. you're looking for someone that you want to have as a governor or as a president, you have to look at the person and all of his associates as well, too, because birds of a feather flock together. And people weren't looking at anything else other than just the man, Ronald Reagan. And that's
Let me ask you a question, because I really would like to get the... if he must have, you know, sort of gone after personal close relationships with the people in your rock. Because when you have somebody to your home like that, there's a continuity with the relationship so that you feel an ability to call them up and talk to them about issues and the personal things that are part mm-hmm. of the relationship.
Right.
What happened with that part of the relationships that he had with people from your rock?
There was basically a disconnect, because once the people who had befriended him so greatly, such as Marion Hurley, and she was a part of one of the people who helped write this resolution, as she's an attorney, there was just a complete disconnect there because of the betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very difficult to get over.
Yeah, so...
You just feel used.
And people contacted him, right, and asked him, why are you doing this? Why is this happening?
You know, I don't know about that, because I wasn't around at that time in back in the 60s in Iraq, or even the 70s. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could tell you more, but I can't.
Well, maybe one of these days we will find that out, too, because
yes.
that would be a very good thing to know. And people are still alive and can answer the questions.
Right.
But if you take a look at what happened with Ronnie after that and where he mm-hmm. went in terms of the Republican nomination for president, he continued to call himself a conservative.
Yes.
How did that feel to people in your rock, knowing that he wasn't a conservative?
We felt that he was just, you know, he was an imposter, and that's exactly what it was. And unfortunately, his persona had, and his there was a disconnect between reality and fiction, in that he had solidified his personality as being a conservative, and also the people around him had consolidated this, that people just accepted it. And even though when you tried to tell them, well, he's not really a conservative, they said, oh, how can that be true? I mean, he's so wonderful and he speaks so well. And they just really would not believe the facts.
So what you're saying is that even when they were presented with the facts, there was a disconnect because of the emotional pain mm-hmm. with having to confront that. They couldn't even encompass it.
No,
too
they
painful.
Couldn't encompass it. It was just too painful, and that's why there were people who, even though others, you know, some tried to tell them the truth and everything, they just did not want to hear the truth. They
mm-hmm.
just closed their minds to the whole thing. It's, don't confuse me with facts. My mind is already made up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all.
And you can see people doing that because people stay in abusive relationships.
Exactly. They don't want to know what's going on or what's really happening. They're in denial, or they're a what's the word? An enabler.
Mm-hmm. Well, they call it that, but I think sometimes it's just that, especially if we love somebody, we have a tremendous amount invested in the relationship, it's really
exactly.
hard to give up, because
yeah.
the person that is being abusive, you know, will come back and they will say, oh, but I'm so sorry and I love you so much and yada, 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 yada.
Right.
And they'll make you believe it, because the kind of people who do that have an ability to do that, or they wouldn't be in the position of being able to do it over and over and over again, which they do.
Exactly. And it's very hard for those people who've been the victims of abuse to be able to see that, even
mm-hmm.
when you're telling them that. And it doesn't make any difference whether you're old or whether you're young or whether you're an old victim. I know of one lady who was 75 who was a victim of abuse and couldn't believe that you know, all of these things that the people were telling her about the abuser were actually so. Anyway, mm-hmm. it's a terrible thing, but
what happened in the wake of this to Yurok? Okay, you lost half of your membership.
It was about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you had been, the thing that I got talking to you earlier about Yurok was that there had been an excitement about the kind of a future that was going to be represented by the philosophy of Barry Goldwater and Joe Schell and the changes that would come about in California, not just to mm-hmm. hold it at bay and make sure we didn't become less free, but to make us more free and
right.
take us to the sort of vision that we had that was very much the thing that, you know, a few years later brought the Libertarian Party into existence. That sense of unlimited possibility that
right.
the world could be the thing that we had dreamed it could be.
Yes, and it is possible as well, too, and it's possible with Ron Paul, because Ron Paul doesn't have the liberal baggage with him. What you see is what you get, and what he says is exactly what he thinks. As evidenced when, in that first debate over the, quote-unquote, over the Reagan Library, when Giuliani asked him to take back the comment that he had made about the Iraq War and, you know, why people were bombing us, and Ron Paul said no, he wasn't going to take it back, and stood his ground.
I love the look on his face, didn't you? It's like, no, I'm not going to take that back. What do you mean?
Right, and that's one of the reasons why he shot to number one in that poll afterwards. And I think after the quote-unquote second debate, it was basically just a bunch of, you know, questions that they had fielded. Ron Paul was either number one or number two. And then after the third one, I think he was still way up there in the top as far as all the polls. And, of course, the mainstream media says, well, that's just because I think the third one you had to have a BlackBerry or something where it was an electronic device where you could text message in your response. And he still
uh-huh.
came out number one. I mean, if they're going to have a poll of what people really thought, and of course they the pundits all poo-pooed the idea that he said, well, you know, he has a lot of young supporters. Well, if they had really wanted to have a true poll, why didn't they have a telephone poll the way that they do for Dancing on the Stars, where they gave each candidate a separate number and they're judged as to how many people call in for that particular person? And
mm-hmm.
you can only use one phone number one time. So in other
mm-hmm.
words, if you have four phone numbers at home and a couple of cell phones, you could make six calls for one person. But at least there, you know, it would be a better a poll and more realistic than this thing where they have only people with BlackBerries or things that can make, enter polls by some code or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Yes. And all of those things are absolutely true. And
yes.
you can see how people have just put their fingers into it and this time know they're going to do it. We saw
yes.
a little tiny bit of that at the Perot campaign, which
mm-hmm.
actually sort of resulted in the Reform Party because Americans were hungry. And
yes.
obviously Americans continue to be hungry, and they're hungry for this exactly the same thing.
Right. But now they have a genuine candidate who's there, because Ron Paul is a simple man. He's not a millionaire. He's not putting out all of his money to run for office as Ross Perot was able to do. I mean, the people who are supporting him are men and women who are giving widows mites because they believe in Ron Paul. Some of them are even
mm-hmm.
taking money out of their mouths to give to his campaign because they believe so strongly in what he does, and they support him for it. And one of the things that Ron Paul has done over the years, too, is he has educated his constituents on the Constitution. And that is one of the reasons why he is has been voted for so heavily in his district, because he tells them what the truth is and what their liberties are and what the Constitution really means. And in a district where it's predominantly Democrat, because his district has been gerrymandered around so much, he still gets 60% of the vote. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's a tremendous crossover, because the Democrats, even though they're registered Democrats, they believe in him. And
mm-hmm.
they know that he is working for them. He's working for the people, not for the party.
That's right. And it's very clear that that's where his focus is. And I don't recall anybody like that in the Republican Party or the Democratic Party in the past.
No.
He is truly unique.
He really is. I mean, when Robert Welch started the John Birch Society, he said, you know, politicians are friends until they turn their back on us. But as in the case of David Dreyer, when he went from 100% conservative down to 90, and I think he's running somewhere around 50 or less right now, 50%
uh-huh.
less. Ron Paul has always been consistent for the last, let's see, he's been back since 97. Last 10 years, he has been 100%. So he
mm-hmm.
hasn't backed down. He hasn't changed his principles. What you see is what you get. And that's what the people are hungry for. They're hungry for the truth and somebody who's going to stand up and say, this is what I believe, these are my principles, and if you don't like them, leave them. And they're saying, this is what we want. This is the kind of man who will be a good, who will make a good president, and will lead us in the right direction as well too.
Mm-hmm.
People who go to his office with some sort of scheme know that they can just forget it, because if it isn't enumerated in the Constitution, then he won't have anything to do with it.
That is such an amazing thing to say about anybody in politics. It's really inspiring, isn't it?
It is. It is, especially when most of the other people out there, especially our senators, are, ever since they've had direct election by the people, they're looking to see how much money you're going to put into their coffers for their next election, rather than to see whether they can really do something for you or not. They're just
yeah.
there for the money, basically.
And your rock is, you've gotten kind of a new founding, right? Because this is something that you can believe in. And that does bring us together.
Absolutely. Well, we've supported Ron Paul for years. His legislation has always been in, the resolutions that we have come up with every year. And we have depended upon him. We know him. And that is one of the reasons why we endorsed him for president.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be an exciting campaign period. And I know that, we're all going to be out there working for the one that can take us back to where we need to be.
Absolutely. Well, I know that it's going to be out there. It's still going to be a shoe leather thing. The Ron Paul meetup groups are absolutely fantastic because people come together from all walks of life. As I've said before, carnivores and herbivores and omnivores are in there. And so you don't know who is going to be there, but they're all for Ron Paul. And they're all very excited about his campaign as well, too. It's just a tremendous thing. Whereas other people who are out there on the trail right now, someone talked about the Iowa convention and, the Iowa...
Straw poll?
Not the straw poll, but there was somebody who was recently out there. I think one of the candidates in when they had the Iowans for fair taxes and...
For tax relief, I think it is.
Tax relief, yes, excuse me. And Mitt Romney was there, and they had a big parade through town, and he only had maybe about 150 supporters, and they were all old. But Ron Paul's supporters are young, and they're vibrant and enthusiastic, and they're sponges for knowledge, and they are the new guard. They truly
yeah.
are. One of those young men came to me, and he the other night, and he said, what can I learn? And he wanted to see some of, so we gave him a bunch of videos and the books that he'd never seen before. And he's a student, and he's working on a degree in manufacturing engineering. So he's going to be one of the superstars. But these young people are just, they want knowledge. And the only people around who can give them the knowledge that they need are the people who've been in the fight for as long as we have, and that's been about 63, that's been 44 years.
It's going to be wonderful.
It is.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to hopefully having you back so we can talk some more about it. But thank you so much being with us tonight.
My
God
pleasure,
bless
Melinda.
Thanks. Thanks.
You.
God bless and have
too.
A wonderful weekend.
Thank you. I will. You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. That's our show for tonight, Friday, July 20th. 2007. We always close our show by reading the Declaration of Independence, the important part. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that brings us to freedom, and may God be with you every step of the way. Good night.